things we're dealing with are threats to humanity unlike anything the world has ever seen before.
We can bequeath our children a greener planet and a more prosperous future.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger.
If unprecedented changes are not made and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero Carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 5, Just Stop the Tories. I'm Ian Collins and this is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it is in. And Dale, we are hot off the first introduction last week of Right Wing Nut. There's the sound effect. It's back again. Early doors, 2 weeks on the bounce, and the cast list is increasing.
Well, yeah, it is, isn't it? We're finding no shortage of material here. I'm loving it. Right Wing Nut or Right Wing Nut. I can't remember which one I prefer, but never mind. let's kick off with the...
Right Wing Nut. Yeah, there you go. Let's just mix it up a bit.
It's all about the intonation.
Correct.
Story at the heart of this episode's Wing Nut mini episode is electric car sales. UK electric car sales falling further behind since Sunak's inverted commas, screeching U-turn on climate policies. This is what industry analysts are saying. So UK sales of electric cars grew by 31% in the last 12 months we have data for to July this year. Sounds amazing. But across Europe, it's 61%. So we're growing at half the rate of Europe. And the industry says that's Sunak's fault, right? His stupid pushing back by 5 years, the deadline by which we will ban the sale of new petrol and diesel cars. It doesn't help anybody. Yeah. He said it would help people with the cost of living crisis. But Jesus, he doesn't get it, does he? If you're struggling with the cost of living, you aren't worried about buying your next new car in 7 years' time, right?
True. Yes, indeed.
He doesn't get that. Shall I carry on?
Yeah, carry on, Dale.
Well...
Carry on, Dale. That's a whole other feature, right?
So joining in the story this week is Matt Le Tissier. Used to be a footballer, right?
Good footballer as well.
Yeah, good footballer. He's not so good when it comes to facts, though, right? So we saw a tweet from him this week, bless him, saying that UK electric car sales are falling exponentially because they're shite, basically, and all the friends he knows has got one, have had trouble with them, that kind of stuff, you know. So we had to respond and say, Matt, they grew 31%. First thing, that's not a fall. And second thing, it's obviously not exponential either. You know, que pasa?
True.
We didn't get an answer, but you know, hey.
He did nothing at all, so he didn't respond.
I haven't seen it. At the point of speaking to you here, I haven't seen it, so I don't want to, say no in case I've missed it.
Well, you see, Le Tissier is an interesting character because a bit like his metaphoric cellmate, David Icke.
cellmate, did you say?
they sit, he's surrounded by tinfoil, I think. What's the technical phrase is, he's gone f***ing nuts. Now, that would be an opinion, of course, if the lawyers are listening. I can't state that as a fact. He's just got different opinions, but they're very, very special.
Different facts, right?
And
as they like to say over there in the US, just got different facts.
Listen, you can have your own opinions. You can't have your own facts, right? You cannot have your own facts.
You can make stuff up. And, you know, that's Trump's specialty. And I think it was about Trump that somebody first said this, that they were presenting alternative facts.
That's right. These are alternative facts. And this was said by someone, you know, in a senior position.
Yeah, it was related to the size of his crowd for his inauguration, actually. The pictures gave the lie to his claim to have the biggest ever. It was quite sparse.
Yeah.
I think his first press spokesperson, he had a few, simply said it was alternative facts. But we digress because we have another right-wing nut to add into this story. Elon Musk.
Musky is back.
I mean, I'm sure he's right-wing. Whether he's a nut or a wing nut, I don't know. But I'm sure he's right-wing. And this week, he's joined Rishi Sunak in some kind of AI conference. And Sunak has been beating this drum about AI for a while now, saying I think this week we heard it was the biggest threat since the nuclear war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sunak's banging on about it. This is the man, by the way, that doesn't know how to use a contactless card and whose phone ate his WhatsApp messages so the COVID inquiry couldn't read them.
I mean, it was an old Nokia, to be fair. You know, they do eat stuff.
I'm just not sure he's the right person to tell us about technical and IT-based threats. I don't think he knows all about them, actually.
Yeah, it's
what I'm trying to say.
It's kind of interesting. And the Musk thing, because I've never you know, you tend to assume that all those cool cats in Silicon Valley, although he's obviously South African by birth, but all those characters, the Zuckerbergs and the like, are all probably quite kind of liberal characters. I don't think their lifestyle is that, but out loud, they seem to want to wear that as their badge. You know, we understand everything. We understand poverty. We understand the environment. You know, we understand, we know what's going on. But Musk is kind of almost singing from a slightly different or acting from a different playbook here, because he's been very pro-Trump. And, yes.
And free speech, rabid free speech. Sorry to interrupt
you. No, indeed. That's... It's exactly that. He's allowed people back onto Twitter and the like that would never have been allowed before. And I know there's some debate about, you know, who gets the final say, but he certainly seems to have encouraged a lot of those unpleasant voices back into the tent.
Yes, but the real reason he's in this week's Wingnut section is because he said, and this is so funny, he said that if...
It's already funny, I haven't even heard it.
That's just the build-up, okay? I'm just working the audience. He said, if AI falls into the hands of environmentalists, and by the way, he claims to be one, I mean, just park that for a second, then it'll be the end of the world. Because, he says, environmentalists think that humans are bad, and therefore it's logical that if they get our AI, then it will develop into a thing that kills humans, and it will be the end of the world as we know it.
Wow.
If environmentalists get hold of AI. And I think to myself, he's obviously been drinking the Sunak Kool-Aid this week about the threats of AI and this kind of stuff. And I think actually this is the plot of the first Terminator film. And I've always thought this about AI, you know, when everybody keeps banging on about how dangerous it is, I think only if we give it control of fucking weapons can it actually hurt us.
Yes.
Surely. And that's what happens in the first Terminator film. We give control of all the weapons in the world to an AI that goes, do you know what? These people are bad. Let's just get rid of them.
Yeah. Or alternatively, only if it's controlled by fuckwits. Which is the other thing, because the list of people that are claiming to be, you know, no, I'm in charge. No, I'm in charge. You know, Musk and co. That bothers me as much as the potential itself.
Yes, and you know what? Give me a choice between AI right now, you know, and it's not like overdeveloped in terms of its capability. Give me a choice between that and Sunak, Johnson, Truss, any of the others. I choose AI any day. I think it'd do a damn good job of running the country compared to the inhabitants of number 10 for the last couple of years.
Yeah. They got some big names at this AI conference.
I know what's coming.
The vice president, she's there, Kamala Harris, Ursula von der Leyen, and also Nick Clegg. He's remember him, Nick Clegg, little Nick.
He used to be somebody, didn't he?
He used to be somebody. Now he's like earning a squillion quid out of the Facebook empire over there at the Valley. But he's there. And the two godfathers of AI. Now, I didn't know about Joshua Bengio, who's one of them. And the other is a man called Professor Yann LeCun. Now, is that a typo? I don't know, but...
It could be one, couldn't it? I mean, not in that form, but you could easily typo that name.
Yeah. They've got differing views, apparently, on the potential threats of AI.
Well, but maybe auto spell check would, you know, just like fill in the last letter or something.
That would indeed. I mean, clearly he hasn't put his own name through the system yet. Because I think that would throw up hilarity for the rest of time, perhaps.
Maybe that's the first thing he did with AI. He modified auto spell check correction things. Don't do that to his name.
Yeah, he's had a lifetime of this shit. He's fed up with it. I think when they started printing the badges, I'm with LeCun, he decided that was the final thing. So we will see how that all pans out.
I think we should move on.
Should we do food?
Food, yes.
There's a lot about food, actually. There's a couple of stories here, right? I mean, particularly a disturbing one, which wouldn't disturb you, Del, because this is to tell us something we didn't already know. But the industry figures behind the declaration of scientists backing meat eating.
Yeah, and I saw this. I mean, it was about a year ago, and I think it was launched in Ireland. And it declared that animal proteins were the most readily available that we had on the planet. And then actually, if we stop eating animals, we could cause more harm because they also help lock up carbon in the soil and this kind of stuff. And you do hear this kind of narrative from pro-farming, you know, people, farmers, lobby groups, industry, that kind of thing. I've heard it before. But somebody did a bit of research. I think it was Greenpeace did a bit of research, and they found that 36 people or so that signed it were kind of like all of the leading academics that work for the meat industry.
And isn't it funny when it turns out like that?
It does. And it's been challenged by other academics and scientists who say this isn't actually a credible piece of work. You know, they point out the science that pulls in the other direction that says actually we cannot crack the climate crisis. We can't beat it unless we stop eating meat and dairy. And actually, it's the single biggest thing that anybody can do to reduce their climate impact, stop eating animals. But it's great to have this exposed, because it's the kind of thing that our friends Mike Graham and Julie Hartley Brewer would, you know, wave around otherwise on the radio and say, look, Dale, you know, there's these scientists that say eating meat is good.
Yeah. And when it comes to type 2 diabetes, we know that whilst that's not just a food issue, we also discover this week it's an air pollution issue.
Yeah. And I'm so kind of like blown away by this, actually, because you type 2 diabetes, you think it's all about food.
Yeah.
And there's a 7-year study taking place in India where they have incredibly high levels of PM2.5. It's a tiny particle of pollution from diesel engines primarily. They have levels of it that are like 40 times higher than World Health Organization recommended limits in their cities and stuff like that. And it turns out that something like 100 million Indians already have type 2 diabetes, and another 150 have got the kind of the early stages of that. So like 250 million Indians have got this disease. Basically, anyway, the rates are running at twice the European or global average.
Wow.
And they've determined that these particles are increasing blood sugar levels. They're so small. They're a 30th of the size, the thickness of human hair, and they can get into every parts of our body. They're increasing food, sure, blood sugar levels, and pollution is causing type 2 diabetes. I think that's incredible.
Yeah. And big oil is coming to dinner as well.
Yeah. Can I just say this, actually, before we land there? In my book Manifesto, I kind of set out these overlapping crises that we face: the climate crisis, the extinction of wildlife globally, and the human health crisis, and how they're caused by two things: burning fossil fuels and eating animals. And they do have some overlaps, like burning fossil fuels is fueling some of the human health crisis, and eating animal products is causing type 2 diabetes, amongst other things. What I didn't know at that time is that actually burning fossil fuels is also causing type 2 diabetes. I find that really incredible. All of these things overlap. It's animal agriculture on the industrial scale. And I'm jabbering, aren't I?
No. This is fascinating stuff, because and we were well ahead of the game on this one years ago when we started doing this podcast. But you know, people talk about the weather, and they talk about cars, and they talk about, you know, what's on the green agenda. But the one area that doesn't get the prominence is the food industry. It doesn't seem to get the headlines in the same way.
It doesn't. And it's a good point you made there, actually. You remind me, when we talk about electric vehicles, you know, Rishi Sunak is defending people's right not to buy an electric vehicle because they're cheaper to run and they don't pollute the air, right? Why would you not defend people's right not to have one?
Yeah.
Nobody talks about the pollution and the fact that it kills people. It actually kills people, as well as harms the quality of life. And now we know that the vehicle pollution, the slowing down of the move to electric vehicles, will cause type 2 diabetes in our country as well. And so it crosses over from electric vehicles into food. It's a crazy melange of problems that we're creating with these two big things: industrial animal agriculture, which means basically eating animals, and burning fossil fuels. And they're overlapping and causing all the problems we face.
You know who we need on this?
Batman.
Professor LeCun. He's the man. He can put it into one of his systems and get the answer for us. Let's do some questions as well. This from James. If Labour win the next election, what are some of the quick wins Starmer could do to tackle climate change? Good question. Yeah, I think he's going to come out the traps with some policies. What do you think he needs to do?
Yeah, well, you know what? I think they've been really clear that on day one, they will unban onshore wind. And that's a massive thing. Hopefully, they will also take the restrictions off solar, onshore solar, because those two technologies together need no public money, and we can build them at a rate of knots, really fast to build, the cheapest form of energy that we can build, and they give us energy security as well as lower bills and blah, blah, blah. We can get to 100% green electricity on the grid in less than 10 years if they make that one change to planning restrictions on those two technologies.
Question from Walter. How can we convert climate deniers into understanding how monumental the climate emergency really is?
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we keep sharing videos.
Get
and
your
we keep
head out the sand. There you go.
That's right. Yeah. What can we, maybe we need to like set up some kind of travel company and whisk a few select people away to the places where it's really happening, you know, right in the middle, in the eye of whatever storm it is, whether it's a heat storm, a cold one, a wet one, a dry one, whatever it is, parachute them in and say, this is the fucking climate crisis we're talking about.
Yeah. Elaine says, why don't wind turbines have solar gathering power too?
Oh, it's a nice question. I hadn't thought about that since about the year 2000 when we built Britain's first megawatt windmill, and we were just getting into solar, just looking at it. And we thought, yeah, why don't we run some panels up and down the tower, you know, that kind of stuff. But the amount of energy you can make is so small. Basically, solar power needs a big surface area, roughly, I'm going to say 3 acres for a megawatt. Yeah. Whereas a windmill of a megawatt has got a base of, I don't know, 10 meters by 10 meters or something like that. It's very small. So wind needs less land area for the same megawatt, vastly less. And that's the reason why we don't hang solar panels on windmills.
There it is. Story here, Extinction Rebellion co-founder guilty of breaking windows. This was an HS2 protest. Now, this is Gail Bradbrook. You and Gail appeared on my program on the radio a couple of years ago. You had very differing views on vandalizing windows and smashing the shit out of office blocks and the like, which she seemed very much in favor of as sort of direct action, and you never did.
Yeah, and actually I think back then this was because Gail's from Stroud, or she lives in Stroud, where I do, and she went down the high street with a hammer and bashed a bank window. and of course, I was asked, you know, whether I support it and that kind of stuff. And I said, actually, I didn't. You know, obviously, I support the cause, so many of them environment causes, but not the destruction of property, because I just think it plays into the hands of the authorities, you know, the other side and that kind of stuff. Plus, it's also a bad thing to do. It is a form of aggression, violence, indeed. And so we had that chat. But we also had a disagreement at WOMAD on the ecotricity stage. I think Jon Snow was our host, and we're having a chat about how we, you know, solve the climate crisis and all that kind of stuff. And she shocked me by coming out and saying, actually, we didn't have to give up meat. It was okay as long as we had better meat, you know, meat that was looked after. I imagine whenever anybody says that, I imagine a cow on a sunbed, and that's high animal welfare standards. You know what I mean? But that's not, you know, sipping a cocktail, you know?
Yeah, I think you challenged her on that as well on the radio. I was utterly gobsmacked to discover that she was a meat eater.
And the first time it ever happened to me was COP4, I want to say, in Buenos Aires. Yeah. And me and Greenpeace, we'd infiltrated this big climate coalition. They were one of those organizations named like they were the good guys, but they were the bad guys, like the Climate Coalition. But actually their job was to disrupt the climate talks. And so early in the morning, they all got together, oil companies, car companies, and they divvied up the work of going out and disrupting all of the different sessions. We infiltrated. I put a tie on to infiltrate that meeting. And that was super, super interesting. In the evening, we went out for dinner. I had a pizza with no cheese on. At that lot, they all ordered steak. I couldn't believe it. Seriously? I'm like, guys, what are you doing? Do you know anything?
We also discovered as well on a later program that Gail drives a massive diesel gasoline 4x4.
Well,
which, that story made quite global headlines at the time. Everybody nearly fell off their chair. Anyway, she was found guilty of breaking the window. Well, this was interesting. She told the jury that she was moved to pursue civil disobedience after repeatedly emailing her MP and having done all the marching and the petitions. Now, the fact there was a jury there means it was a Crown Court case over a broken window.
Yeah. But I realised, I was thinking, what a useless MP she has. And then I realised the same MP that I have, and she's useless.
That's right, yeah. Well, we've come full circle. We now sympathise with Gail.
Absolutely. And not everybody can afford an electric car. Right? I kind of have a bit of a line here when people say, oh, but you drive a diesel car or something. You know, I don't think that's not an incredibly credible.
Yeah, but a Sherman tank, Dale, is a bit over the top, isn't it?
A bit over the top, yeah.
Final question from Josh, who says, do you think the Tories will delay the election to January 2025? Because, of course, that's the maximum they can go to. That means campaigning over Christmas. Who wants a Christmas with politicians knocking on your door? I want Santa knocking on the door, not Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not a fan of Christmas. I'm not a fan of the Tory party. So I think that'd be a nightmare for me to have an election at Christmas. But look, I don't know if they will or they won't. We can't know, can we? They're clinging on for dear life. They've got no good news to offer us. The economy's not going to, like, you know, make some kind of massive recovery in the time that they have left. They've got no integrity. We know this. Sunak is unelected by the country and by his own party. He doesn't give a shit. He's making big decisions, tearing up Boris Johnson's manifesto on which this current government were elected. He doesn't care about that. As soon as he loses, he's off to live in America because he's got a green card. We know that. I hope they don't delay it to January, but we have no way of knowing, and we have no power, no control in this.
I think he's auditioning for Silicon Valley. I think he's going to follow Nick Clegg. That's why he's invited Musk over for this AI lark. Because he's thinking Clegg, he's done quite well. I could be the kind of Clegg of Twitter, working with Elon.
Elon,
as he shall now be known.
Listen, I don't care, right? They can all fuck off to Silicon Valley and I'll be happy.
Yeah, there it is. Dale, have a cracking week.
Is that it?
That's
a good note.
It's a brilliant note to finish on. We'll speak in a week's time.
Fab.
Cheers, Dale. Don't forget, of course, to follow this podcast so that you get each new episode automatically. And also, speaking of following, make sure you follow Dale on social media, twitter.com/DaleVince, facebook.com/DaleVince, and on TikTok too.
Zero Carbon.
East on.